Welcome, welcome. You're listening to our podcast, Two Massage Therapists and a Microphone. My name is Ryan. I'm a registered massage therapist, registered kinesiologist here in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. We got a real cool guest on the other side of our screen. And yeah, today, let's just call me Ryan.
Hey, guys. It's Amanda. And we've got Joanna here. She's a second time guest, and she's from California. And in Joanna's defense, we were just counting the how long it's been since we've spoken or seen each other. She actually was a speaker. She did one of the MTM talks at the CMC 2022, and she was on the podcast in 2022. Anyway, she had a slight lapse in memory and emailed me this morning, but didn't realize she was emailing like mine and Mark's joint account, I guess, and said like, "I'm sorry, remind me of your husband's name again. Is it Ryan?" So we're going with Ryan today.
What's the guy that played Ken in Barbie? Isn't he a Ryan?
He's a Ryan.
Yeah. Can you feel my Kenergy?
I feel your Kenergy. Nice. Well, Joanna, at least you gave us a good laugh today. This is totally off topic, but just before you came on, Mark was playing music like while we were waiting for this to start, and I already had my headphones on. How do you hear anything? Like, how do you have eardrums left? The volume that this man plays music at when like he just has his headphones on, I don't know how your head doesn't explode.
Music has to be really loud for me most of the time. Oh, but God. I think my hearing's I used to play in a band. I've been playing music forever, right? So I started playing like trumpet in grade 5. And trumpet's not a quiet freaking instrument for the most part, right? And especially when you're sitting, because like when you're playing in a concert band or a stage band, like you're sitting just amongst a bunch of other brass instruments.
Yeah, I also played trumpet.
That's right. So you know. So like there's two other trumpet players to my right. There's one other to my left. And then there's trombones behind me. And it's like, it's always just constantly loud.
Yeah.
And then from there, I started playing in a rock band, which was just, it was worse for my hearing. And we used to practice in my buddy's basement, and we would play at a volume louder in his basement than they would allow us to play on stage.
So when
at a venue.
When I would attend the practices, I wore ear protection.
It's stupid.
The guys in the band never wore.
No, well, I
don't remember seeing you wear ear protection.
I didn't
ever.
When John was our drummer, he did all the time.
Okay.
When Tony was our drummer, he did all the time. TJ, the singer, guitar player, he had in-ear monitors, so he was okay. Dave, I don't remember if he did at all. And I never
did. You never did.
I never did, which is stupid.
Well, this is why the music was so ridiculous.
But then we would have the amps up at a certain volume in our practice space, and then we would hit a stage at a large venue, and we would have the amps up at the same volume. And the sound guy's like, "You got to turn down that stage volume. Like, it's just way too freaking loud." And we're like, "Oh." But we always used to get in battles with sound men. It was fucking horrible. Because our guitar player, he's also a music producer. He produces a lot of actually big time stuff. And he used to do movie scores and all the rest of it. So, like, he's very particular about his sound. And we'd always get into the battle with the drugged out fucking sound man. It was horrible. And at the end of the day, we always won the battle. Because it's like, this is our music. Just like we know what we want it to sound like, and we want certain dynamics in certain songs, like,
and that sound is loud.
Don't fuck around with it any which way. But that was a long story for nothing. Yeah, I can't hear stuff. I think that's the bottom line.
Yeah, so I was very happy.
Mark,
Joanna,
doesn't hear, but
when
Ryan hears, awesome.
Yeah, Ryan can hear. Mark can't hear shit. Oh, man. Well, Joanna, welcome back for the second time. So for anybody who didn't hear your first episode, I mean, the recap is that Joanna does coaching for wellness professionals, but she does this very differently than other professionals. I'll let her talk about it. She's also not a massage therapist. So that's another difference from a lot of the coaches that we've had on. And the reason she's back is because she is going to be running a really cool event for the third time, and it's happening the first week of May. So we wanted to let people know about it who might be interested. But before we do any of that, can you reintroduce yourself, Joanna?
Before you even do that, I want to ask you first, Amanda.
Me?
Yes. Oh. Do you think it's at an advantage to have a coach for your massage therapy business that's not a massage therapist? I feel like there are so many advantages for that.
There's pros and cons, but definitely there are advantages to that. I mean, people without even realizing it, have so many biases. And I, you know, you hear a lot of people, it's like the massage therapist who says, like, I treat the way I want to be treated. You would coach the way that you felt your practice ran the best versus looking at the therapist and trying to figure out what strategies can help you run your business instead of looking at like what strategies helped me. And I've heard coaches even speak that way. Certain ones, I won't call them out, who talk about like, this is what worked for me, but you are a very different therapist than your clients are. And you have to really get to know them and what who they're trying to target and what type of work they're trying to do in order to get inside their business and and help to make it run successfully. So I see that as an advantage with Joanna working with RMTs, is because she's not one or CMT or LMT. I don't know. She's in California. So but she works with international clients. So Joanna, reintroduce yourself for anyone who didn't hear your episode back in 2022.
Ryan didn't hear it. So.
Ryan didn't
hear it. Sure thing. And let me share like how I, you know, how is it that I would be coaching folks when I am not a massage therapist myself. So my name is Joanna Sapir. I'm not a massage therapist. What I am is a former wellness practice owner. So I founded a strength and conditioning gym a long time ago. 2008 is when I started. And that was my first foray into business. And so just in a nutshell, I discovered that you can be really good at what you do. It doesn't mean that you'll have a successful business, though, that you actually have to learn the business side of things. In my case, my business actually kind of took off and I just ended up totally burned out and realized like, oh, I need to actually learn how to build systems in my business so this thing can run without just me being this crazy workhorse. And so I did, and I decided at some point that, cool, I want this to be a business that I can sell and hand off to somebody else, which is what I did. And so how is it that I'm coaching others? I realized that I'm like a patterns systems thinker. So I was the client of many, many massage therapists. I think I shared last time, like I've been an Olympic style weightlifter for the last 15 years. In an aging body, and have needed plenty of healthcare for myself, including body work, which is just a huge piece of my own regimen. And so, as a client of many different wellness practitioners, I was easily able to see what their businesses were like from the client side of things. And because I had figured out how to do it really well myself, like how to build a business that was profitable and sustainable and could run. Even without me there all the time, I could see what was missing from all these folks who I was their client. And like, I thought they were amazing practitioners, but their businesses weren't doing very well. They were either struggling to make enough or on this just kind of crazy overworking cycle.
Yeah.
And so that's actually how I got into this work, was like, I wanted to help all these other folks. And that's what I do now.
I think some people also wear overworking and being the workhorse as a badge of honor. We may have talked about that before, where people think like that the hustle is what you have to do. And sure, there's a point when you're first starting a business that probably is true. And I think that it trips people out when you get to a point where you have developed systems in order to make your business run more efficiently, where you can spend more time maybe on, you know, new avenues or creating like new streams of income, where like it almost seems like this is too easy. Like maybe I'm not doing enough. Why isn't this crazy? Because you're always hearing about like hustle, 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 and being the workhorse, that you don't realize at a certain point you can kind of sit back if you've done things well and your business runs nicely. And like you said, you were then able to sell it because it already had the systems in place that it can just keep running as long as the person doesn't, you know, nosedive.
Well, massage therapy is weird though, because at the end of the day, if you're a solo practitioner, you're trading time for dollars.
Yeah.
So, and if lack of money is on the front of your mind, the only way you know to make money is just to work more.
Yep.
So you're either left with either I work less, but I charge crazy amounts, or I charge what might be considered a normal amount, but I just need to work more than normal.
Mm-hmm.
It's a weird go. And I see how massage therapists really struggle with that.
Yeah. So I want to hear about Joanna. And actually, the first thing I want to ask, you said as a patient, you started to see like what was missing. Were there any trends or things that you noticed with certain practitioners, the ones that were really great, but maybe just were struggling? Like, what was it that they weren't seeing that you were able to point out to them?
Yeah. Well, so, and I'll speak to what for me as a client was most pronounced. And it's kind of a deeper rather than surface level thing, but I'll talk about some surface level things too. Which is that I, you know, so for example, I'm thinking about this one massage therapist who I saw regularly at a time when I was very competitive in weightlifting and had like some pretty major goals for competition. And so I'd come in and see him regularly, but each time it was like brand new. It was like, how are you feeling today? You know, what's going on right now? And that's standard. That's just that seems to be standard in massage therapy and in other modalities as well. But what I knew that I wanted was I wanted him to know, like, okay, now I'm 6 weeks out from this competition, and here's what my training is looking like. And, you know, here's where I peak and here's where I taper and this is how it works. And I just want to know, like, because I don't know the bodywork side of things. I don't know how my soft tissue feels, you know, like, is it in good shape? Is it like, I want to know that he is there for me and has a plan to prepare me for example, that competition in 6 weeks.
Right. So lack of treatment planning was something that you noticed right away.
Or maybe not even the lack of treatment planning, but also the communication that comes in with the visits. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Exactly.
It may leave the client thinking, you don't have a plan, or how do I know that we're progressing here, or we're plateauing, or we're regressing based on the communication that you're having with me every single time I come in.
So you said, I just want to say, Joanna, you said this seems to be standard in massage therapy, which may be the case in California. Like, I really hope that isn't the case in, like, for example, we're in a regulated province where massage therapy is considered healthcare and we're supposed to be treatment planning. Do you think that that's standard
here? You also want to look at it from a point where Joanne's coming from in athletic conditioning, athletic backgrounds, where planning is everything.
Planning is everything.
Especially when you're in some sort of competition where your body needs to peak at a certain time. Planning then is absolutely freaking everything. So if she's already coming at it from that type of mindset and then gets the vibe that the therapist is not on the same mindset or is acting in a way that she's not quite used to, especially when she would have her coaches and her trainers and everything else that are probably all on the same plan here, right? Everyone's ships are sailing in the same direction. And then you show up to therapy and it feels like, well, this is really different than what I'm used to. And I've been used to getting great results with what I've been doing before with my coaches and trainers. Why don't I have the same sense when I'm seeing my therapist?
Right.
Maybe I just put words in your mouth.
You guys hit it on the head. So, you know, yes, lack of a seeming treatment plan. And yes, where I happen to be is massage therapy is unlicensed and unregulated. Or I shouldn't say unlicensed, but it's unregulated in the same way as it is for you guys where you are.
Right.
And is considered less, you know, about healthcare. Insurance definitely does not cover it. So there is a different sense to it. But what's interesting is when I talk to therapists now as their business strategist, all the time they'll say, yeah, see, I actually have a plan in my head, but I'm not communicating that to clients. So that's what Mark just noted is like the communication isn't there even a lot of times, even if you have the plan. And so that check-in of like, here's the plan, laying it out from the beginning and like, and then each session, you know, checking in, here's where we are, here's where we've been, here's where we're going, and maybe even course correcting or adjusting as necessary, but we're on a track together.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a huge one for me. And again, this isn't just body work. It might have been even like mental health therapy or working with a naturopath or nutrition coaching, whatever it was, same kind of thing a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
And then other pieces were things like, I mean, I've always noticed this and felt bad about taking advantage of it, but so many practitioners will will completely bend over backwards for clients. Like they, you know, it's again, seems to be standard that the cell phone is the business phone. And so like, if I'm texting my practitioner and it's, you know, Sunday night, like I'm not texting expecting a response right then. That's just the number I have for them, but they'll be responding back like on weekends during times where I'm like, you should be with your family. This is not, you know, business hours. And what I know from now this side of being the strategist for so many of these folks is there is a anxious energy in feeling the need to respond to everyone at all times. So especially if somebody reaches out and is like, you know, my back hurts, I need to be seen, or something's going on, can you squeeze me in? They're squeezing them in at all kinds of times that aren't work times. Yeah. And so what clients who have started with me have said is things like, my business controls my life, my clients control my life. Like, I don't have any freedom here. And really what that is their own lack of boundaries, right? But that comes from, like you were saying, Amanda, or both of you, just that there's this feeling of what we're supposed to be doing or how it's supposed to go that we're responding to. We think that in business, like, I'm supposed to respond to my clients. That's what this is all about. I'm supposed to work as much as, you know, book as many sessions as I can. That's how I make money, versus actually having some clear boundaries that are based on your needs. For taking care of yourself and for the lifestyle you want to live, you know?
Yeah. Mark talks a lot about the psychology of a consumer too. And I think that people need to remember, just by nature, consumers want something that's a little bit more rare and hard to get. Like if you just seem thirsty for everything all the time, you're not really that high in demand, you know? Like the person that's squeezing someone in on a Sunday night, like it just, I don't know. I don't know that that's going to do, one, that's really going to take a toll on your own mental and physical health. Like you need time off, but then it also is, you know, making it seem like, I can, you know, get a treatment from this person whenever. I have a funny story about this, actually. I probably created this because I do have a really, like, I have a small enough practice that I really know all of my clients really well. Like, I treat very part-time. And there's a couple that I see the wife on a regular basis. Like, she's on a treatment plan. We have something set up. She knows when she's supposed to come in. The husband is, when he hurts himself, she will message me and say, he did it again. And then he'll come in for a couple times. We'll deal with his issue and I won't see him again till he hurts himself again. So the wife messaged me on, I think, a Saturday. I don't treat Saturdays, but it was like midday Saturday and I wasn't doing anything. And the message said, you know, he's hurt himself. Do you have any appointments this upcoming week? And I sent my availability. She chose a spot for him. Great. It's booked. On Sunday, I get another text from her. He's so much worse today. He's in agony. Can I send you his phone number and can you call him to give him some advice? And I was like, no. Like, we have an appointment scheduled for Monday, but no, like, I'm not going to take Sunday. And there's probably a lot of therapists that would have said yes, you know, like, I have compassion, this guy's in a lot of pain. But I said, if he's in that amount of pain that he can't wait to see me tomorrow, maybe you need to take him to a doctor. Like, if he's in that extreme pain that we can't wait until the appointment, talking to me over the phone isn't going to do, and I can't do anything. I don't know what's going on with him. I can't do anything over the phone, but that's what. And I was like, did I create this? Like, this, you expect that I can just chat with you on Sunday night because your neck hurts? So, yeah, I definitely said no to that and will be really reevaluating how I allow my clients to talk to me and when I'm responding.
Yeah, totally. I think that so many, and you can tell me examples from you, but what I know helps folks is, I mean, some of the work that, for example, I would do with a client is creating those boundaries and structures. And it's based, again, on your needs and desires around your own, like, when is my family time? When is my business time? Well, this is my business time, and this is when I will respond, and so on. And creating structures and systems where there isn't a case by case, oh, how do I handle this? It's more like, oh, this is how this is handled. This is how this is handled. I have this way when people reach out to me, and this goes for every aspect of the business. New prospective client reaches out. This is what we do for that. Boom, boom, boom. Mm-hmm. Right? That filters them and brings them in as a client, like determines whether they, you know, you want to work with them or not. All those things. Somebody reaches out to, needs to reschedule, boom, boom. This is how it's done. And, you know, some of those pieces are going to involve you actually talking to them. And some of them, like something like a reschedule, should not. It should not be you doing some back and forth and taking your time to deal with that, right? There are so many things that can be done in a more automated and streamlined way. So yeah, it's creating those boundaries and those structures. So, and also, like you're noting, Amanda, you know, you're asking, what did I do that made this person think that they can call me? It's like, then you just start putting pieces in place. Here's when to contact, you know, here's when I will respond. You can email or, you know, anytime, but here's my response hours, do. And maybe even I would just say back to the idea of a treatment plan, which is part of your education, and probably most people listening to this, that is standard, which is awesome. Part of your treatment plans might be a little bit more robust than just these sessions. There might be readings, there might be videos. I mean, you might just kind of collect a little library that you don't even have to create yourself. It could be that other people have made, you know, great videos about this kind of stretch or this kind of thing to do or whatever. If, for example, you know, you treat a lot of people with back pain, so that when this guy is in this excruciating pain and somebody's reaching out, it's like that library is there. Here, remember, there's that library that they can get to even when they can't see you, you know?
So there's two things I want to say here. One is a comment and the other one's a question. Well, the first comment is, even it's going to sound, some therapists take this as hokey, because we always suggest this, that even if you have a solo operation, just you by yourself, create these policies, like put them to pen to paper. Do you know what I mean? Have policy binders, have something that reminds you that these are the systems in place. This is how we're going to operate in any given scenario. And that way it's consistent across the board. So I really love that idea. My question is, have you ever come across a therapist who is struggling financially, but also there's a mismatch in the actual amount of work that they're willing to do? So you were kind of hinting at, oh man, I'm losing my thought here. So you're kind of hinting at having boundaries and figuring out, you know, when is your time and when is your time at work? Have you ever seen such a large mismatch where someone's like, well, I need to make X amount of dollars, but then when it comes down to actually doing the work, they're like, well, I'm not willing to do it like this, or I'm not willing to do it this many hours, or I'm not willing to do this many days. And then based on what they're willing to do, their financial goal is an impossibility, at least through solely doing this bodywork stuff. Have you ever had that?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I actually get the exact opposite more often, or in the exact opposite in terms of the work hours and willingness to work. So one of the exercises I do with all my clients is a profitable pricing session, where we're looking at their actual client-facing hours versus like how much they want to make and what they need to be charging. And what I find is that people actually think that they want to be working more hours than I think is healthy or sustainable for the business. So just for example, and this will be a little bit jolting for some people to hear, but what I teach is, even as a solo practitioner, that only 50%, as a solo practitioner, I should say, it's different for people who are more like clinic owners and so on. For a solo practitioner, that 50% maximum of your work hours should be client facing. That's jolting for people, because they're used to like, well, they might say, I want to work, you know, 25 hours a week. That would be my ideal schedule, would be 25 hours a week in my business. But they're thinking 25 hours and it's all client hours. Like, right, that's how solo practitioners are often operating, is you fill them all. And then at the same time, what they usually don't see is like, they're also complaining, like, I don't know when to do my books and what am I supposed to do for marketing? And I don't know how to do it and when I should do it and da, 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 da. Right. And so one of my standards, like I said, which can be shocking, is 50% of those time, that time. So if you only want a 25-hour work week total, that really only means that 12 to 13 hours are client facing. And then that does change the pricing quite a bit. So I see mostly that people are wanting to work more client facing hours. But in my opinion, the reality is that if you own your own business, you need to be spending half your work time actually leading the business, the financial management, the marketing, the sales, all the pieces of the administration, all the pieces that it takes to run a business. Like, you own a business. It's your job to lead the business. And, you know, if you hire an admin, you can start to let go of some of that and make some shifts. But I don't know if that answers your question, Mark, but usually people want to work more. Mm. And I'm the one saying, it's actually pulled back. If you want 20 client-facing hours a week, then add 20 more to actually like be running your business properly the way you should. And keep in mind, people are coming to me specifically saying, teach me how to run my business. So, that's what I'm teaching them how to do.
Teach me how to run my business.
Well, because most massage therapists feel like they just have a successful business if they can acquire clients.
Yeah.
You know, I can acquire clients and then I can service these people, then I've won the day, right? But how sustainable is that?
Yeah.
I don't know, right? So I appreciate the idea of half the time I'm spending on the actual business and the other half the time I'm in the business. Because you can't do both at the same capacity. It's impossible.
No.
It's
impossible. And this is something we teach too, is most massage therapists are successful by accident because people like massage.
You got something they want.
Yeah. So this is not a hard sell. I'm not trying to sell. If, for example, personal trainers have a bit of a harder sell, right? Not everybody wants to work out, but there's a lot of people who, you know, people who have benefits from massage therapy, because here where we are, it is covered by extended healthcare. So people want massage. So a lot of therapists are successful, but by accident. And something that Mark and I teach is being successful by intent. How do you want your business to run? So reverse engineering this, like exactly as you're saying, how much do you want to work? So how many hours do need to be client facing? How many hours do I need to work on the business?
Can we do this? Because you hear every business coach say, know your numbers, and this will help determine how much you're going to charge. But when you hear them say it, it's left at that. Like, so the audience is going, know your numbers. I don't know what the fuck you mean by know my numbers. What do you mean, know my numbers? And this will help me determine how much I'm supposed to be charging. Maybe you can clear some of that up, because I've never heard a business coach that's doing a live or has a video out or is trying to sell their services. I've never heard someone describe it enough to really make it clear to someone that's listening. And I don't know if that comes purposely because you're like, I don't want to give stuff away. But I also feel that giving away value is the best way to attract a client anyway. But can you clear up some of that stuff if you're willing to?
Somewhere after we finish the interview, I'll dig it up and I'll send it to you guys so you can post it. I have some handout that's 17 numbers you should be tracking in your business. So I'll share that. So I don't know what other people mean when they say know your numbers. I mean, I totally think like data tracking, KPIs, what we call it, key performance indicators, mm-hmm. totally important. And I think of a business, my kind of structure for a business is that it has five departments to it. So let me tell the departments and then we can just say like what some of those numbers that you'd be tracking in each department would
Sounds
be.
Good.
So the departments for me are fulfillment, which is the client services themselves, mm-hmm. marketing, sales. Those are two different departments. So just to clarify real quick, marketing to me is how you attract leads.
Yep.
And sales is how you convert your leads into clients. And those mm-hmm. are two different things. The fourth one is at like operations and administration. And the fifth one is financial management or finance. So in each of those departments, you're going to have different numbers you track. The really obvious ones, when I hear know your numbers, I think, oh, people are probably talking about money. So how much, what's my gross revenue each month? What are my expenses each month? You know, what's my profit each month, et cetera. Like there's just the financial numbers that you're going to get. There's plenty more. Marketing numbers are how many new leads am I attracting each month? And this isn't quantitative, but it can be quantified, which is, where are those new leads coming from? Mm-hmm. I always ask people, who are the last three new clients you got, and where did they find you, right? So you can start actually noting, are most of my places people coming from referrals? Are most of them coming from Google? What's the breakdown? What percentage of leads are coming from what sources? And particularly because when you're getting referrals from others, you want to start actually leveraging that and building stronger relationships with the very specific people who are referring you. So all different ways to leverage that. In sales, how many leads are converting to clients? And then things like, what's my average, you know, lifetime value of a client? How long are clients staying for? How much are they paying over the time? And when you start getting these numbers, I hope you can kind of see that you can see, like, what is the cost of getting a lead? Like, how much is a lead worth when you start taking, you know, the total number, the total amount that a client is worth, if just monetarily, and how many clients there are versus how many leads, you start to actually break it down so that you know, for example, in any marketing efforts, what's worth it to pay. If I'm going to pay for any kind of advertising or any kind of marketing, what's it worth to get a lead? Or even if I'm not, what are the numbers I need to even have, and this is something I'd be happy to share with you guys for free too, if you want to post it. I have what I just call my sales tracker. It's just a spreadsheet, but for brick and mortar businesses, which is what you guys have, I have brick and mortar and an online version. For the brick and mortar version, it's how many leads become how many prospects. So in my system that I teach, just to be clear, a lead is just somebody who gets into your sphere, contacts you in some way, you know, gets on your list or emails or calls or whatever. A prospect is somebody who's actually been qualified. So we have a qualification process that's it's a pre-qualifying phone call. And then once they qualify, I think I talked about this on the last episode, once they qualify, you invite them in for a consultation. And then in the consultation is where you enroll them in a treatment plan. That's kind of my process. So when you have the numbers for each of those, how many leads turn into prospects, how many prospects turn into clients, it gives you a total predictable number of how many leads you need in order to get the number of new clients you need each month.
Yeah.
And so it's just predictability, right? And so that there is huge benefit to knowing your numbers and where you are in any given kind of season or cycle.
Yeah, and I'm hoping people can start putting these pieces together too. Like, when you know these numbers and you can predict how many leads you need, when you are having, like, for the, you know, the therapists who are successful by accident, and I see these things like online, people saying, have you noticed that, like, it's been really, really slow? Well, when you know these numbers that Joanna's talking about, then you can start to actually put reason to why maybe things are a little bit slower and understand where you might need to put a little bit more of your energy or resources to start getting the leads you need to make sure that you're making up for. And I mean, sure, there's seasonality to our business, but again, knowing your numbers will help you to plan for that, to make sure that, you know, you're not dropping way down one month and not getting the profits that you need to pay for your expenses. So knowing your numbers is super important. And a lot of therapists, as I say, don't necessarily look at those as closely as maybe they should, because they're successful by accident until they're not. And, you know, you need to really know those. I know I talked about, go ahead.
Well, you saw that big time with COVID.
Yeah.
Right. The successful by accident suffered big time during COVID versus someone who is a little bit more successful by intent. They survived COVID pretty good.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because they didn't. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
I totally forget what I was going to say, but that's okay. Joanna.
I will just say that you're talking about the successful by accident. That's exactly who I was when I started my gym. Like, the thing took off and I got completely sick. It was just like so much, but I didn't even recognize it. I just thought, like, this is how it's supposed to be. The people are coming and here I am doing my work. And it was like split shifts. And I was a single mom of two little kids. Like, it was nuts. So, at some point I had no choice but to recognize, like, this isn't actually successful. Like, this is totally
unsustainable. Yeah.
Yeah.
I did the same thing. I mean, in In my case, though, I was like 27 and didn't have children. But the first place that I started working as a massage therapist, it was in a very busy established clinic. So I kind of walked into busy, and I was good enough at putting people on treatment plans, and, you know, I was good enough at rebooking and good enough, I guess, as a therapist, so technically, that people stuck around. And so I was busy. And then it got to the point where I realized I was doing all the things that you talked about at the beginning. I was having no boundaries. Can you stay late for this person? Can you come in early? Can you come in on a day that you've already scheduled off? And I know I've told this story before. The chiropractor that owned the clinic, I remember her once booking somebody in a place where I'd blocked off for my lunch break. And I was like, whoa, like I now have 8 people back to back with no break. Like, I don't want to do that. And she kind of like jokingly turns to me and she's like, don't be so lazy. I'm like, lazy? Fucking exhausted. Like, give me a break here. But that's what it became, where I was seeing, like, I don't know, anywhere between 26 and 30 people a week on average. But I didn't have any time for anything else. It was just clients.
So you did mention in passing about hiring admin. And this is something that I'm always curious about. I know you can't give a definite answer because it's going to be individual for everybody. But I can imagine there's sometimes reluctance in a solo practitioner saying, I'm going to hire an admin to take off some of my load, especially because now I got to fucking pay this person.
Yeah.
And maybe I really wasn't where I wanted to be before I'm, you know, having to pay someone to do this work that I can do on my own if I just give up more time. And I know you can't really answer this as full as you'd like to, because it's very individual. But are there markers that you can identify when a solo practitioner might want to pull the trigger on hiring admin?
Yeah. Gosh, I think of it as, I mean, first of all, yeah, like you said, there are some people, it's usually from, in my experience, males, like males more often than females, who hold real tight to the, like, I should be able to do everything thing. So I'll note that. So that does happen, but let's see. Some of the signs are, I don't even know if it's signs. I think that everybody should hire an admin, because we're talking about the kinds of tasks that, that are, how do I put it? They're taking you away from what truly you should be doing, which is either serving at your highest level, like with the gifts that you have, or resting and recovering. You know, like I opened the interview talking about how I was a competitive athlete. It's like the recovery that's needed. You all totally know this, how incredibly important that is to performance. And it's the same for us as business owners. Like, you have to have recovery, and it can't be you get to burn out and then you take a vacation, right? It needs to kind of be built into every day. Mm. So I think it's essential, but it becomes quite easy to hire when you recognize that there are things that you're trying to do that, number one, you suck at and they take you a long time. Mm-hmm. And number two, you can't stand doing them.
Right.
Like, that is cool. Like, you realize that you could pay somebody so much less than your hourly time is worth. Think about how much you pay for how much you're charging, even if you're charging too low, in my opinion, how much you're charging per hour for your massage. Is that what some of those administrative tasks are worth? Like, you know, let's say you're charging $100 an hour. I'm just going to make up that number. Mm-hmm. Like something like, you know, writing emails, sending emails, doing reschedules, getting intake forms out, whatever those things, are those $100 an hour tasks? No, not at right. all. And that's what your time is worth, at least, right? So you actually would be saving money by hiring somebody, you know, 20, 25 bucks an hour, whatever the going rate is, who can do all that and who can do it so much faster right. and better than you. Really, it's what it comes down to.
I see it so much as like a mindset block with therapists, in that I'm going to hire this admin. It's going to free up some time for me, right? So I got a little bit of freedom there. But if I'm not using that time to service clients, then I'm not using that time to make money. So in reality, hiring this person is not putting me ahead financially. So I can see where that mindset block is, you know, and I think the acknowledgement or the discovery of how much freedom you want with your time, I think that has to be a big part of it.
Individual person does, like you said, this is very individual, but you have to look at when are you doing these administrative tasks? Like Joanna said something that really struck a chord with me. It's like, you suck at it and you have to, and it's true. There's certain things that I do that don't come easily to me. And I'm, you know, sitting in front of a computer trying to figure out something that like somebody else could do. And I could be using my time to do something else, even if it's not seeing a client.
But that's what I mean. So
why am I spending time doing this right now?
So this is in my mind, this is where that mind block is. Okay, I can hire someone to do this. It's because they can do it quicker and they can probably do it faster and not have to spend that same time. But God damn it, I'm not going to be doing anything in that time to make myself money anyway.
But you can, but that's what you can do.
Exactly. So this is where I think therapists have that major mindset block, where that freedom allows you to move in different ways that you wouldn't be able to because you're caught up doing this other thing.
Yep. And to Joanna's point as well, doing things like taking care of yourself, that is actually indirectly helping you make a lot more money. Like, it's something that I had to get it's something I had to get my own mindset over. I've spent the last, I would say, 7 years being business owner and mom, like just those two things, like just really like going back and forth between like this work and this work and this work and this work and bouncing all over the place and burning myself out. I'm just really telling on myself a lot today, but just spending time doing all of that. And it wasn't until the last like few months really that I realized, like, why am I skipping something like this morning? The weather's terrible, but I went for a half hour walk this morning and I've been doing that more regular. Why am I skipping 30 minutes? What is 30 minutes of my time just to like clear my head, feel a little bit better, get some fresh air? And I've been so much more productive with tasks that I'm now not dragging myself here to do, because I just took 30 minutes to like go for a walk or go to the gym or whatever. Like those things are indirectly making you, or directly even making you, much more productive. So yeah, the mindset definitely has to change of like, you can't do everything and do it well. So, you know, in your planning, maybe you have to budget for a part-time administrative person that can help you do things that you either don't have time for or you're not doing them well anyway.
Yeah. And can I mention a couple things you could do with your time? I mean, taking a walk is awesome, right? But you could use a walk or any sort of, you know, quote unquote, free time as visioning, like, where do you want your business to be? How many of you listening are doing like a quarterly review and saying, this is where I was this quarter, you know, speaking of looking at the numbers, and here's where I want to go next. And how do I want to do that? Like envisioning and planning, strategic planning is one piece. But then how about the stuff that you know you're supposed to be doing that you're not doing? For example, all of you have a list of past clients that you have their emails. How often are you sending emails where you nurture that list? Not just like reach out and say, book an appointment, but hey, like what's going on with your body? Maybe teaching them something about self-care, about taking care of their body, or why they need massage. Nurturing your email list. How about reaching out to past clients and checking in with them one-on-one? How about the kind of networking that brings you more referrals, like connecting with other practitioners who are adjacent to massage therapy and the kind of practitioners who are recommending massage therapy, connecting with those folks so that you're building referral relationships? All these simple things that are going to bring you more business, you could be doing in 30 to 60 minutes a day if you're not having to deal with, you know, tasks that drag you down.
I think another big mindset block with therapists is the idea of doing things and not getting paid for it, and not being able to see the long game benefit of doing something that doesn't necessarily put a dollar in your pocket.
Yeah.
And I don't know, man. I kind of want to shake a bunch of therapists and be like, let's can we think long game on this a little bit? Like, you're going to benefit so much more by doing this thing that you're not going to get paid for in this moment.
And in this moment.
Exactly. And then the amount that you're going to make off of doing this thing 2 years from now won't even match what you would have gotten paid for this moment.
Yep.
It blows my mind. It really does. It's like we had in the conference. We invited someone who is a business coach for therapists. As far as I know, she's not a massively well-known business coach for therapists, and we invited her to the conference.
We recognize that her content is good. She has no audience.
Come teach a class or come do a talk. And the first thing out of her mouth was, how much am I getting paid for this?
Which is fair to ask the question.
Right. But the refusal to do it because we're like, listen, you're going to get this type of, and I hate when it's like, oh, it's like, when there's a promise of exposure, it's not worth it. I'm like, I don't know what you mean by that. Like, for you to go out, your name, your course, your credentials to 20,000 emails, like, that's worth it to me. Like, how much would you pay Facebook to get in front of 20,000 people, even just your name in print like that? Do you know what I mean? Or actually seeing, having a classroom full of people or having 200 people online. You know, it's just weird to me. It's like, especially when it comes to the online stuff, you got 200 people that are watching you online. If you had 200 people in a room, if you had 50 people in a room with you, you'd be ecstatic. Do you know what I mean? But you got 200 people that are staring at you online and understanding who you are and what you do and all the rest of it, but you won't do it because there's not a dollar attached to it. To me, that's just lack of fucking sight for future.
I mean, we're talking to the right person about this because when we spoke to Joanna, I think we might have already had like the CMC lineup done, but then you were on our podcast and we're like, would you want to come? And you decided to fly here on your own dollar because we had already maxed out our budget for everything, but you flew here on your own just to get in front of a different audience. And you saw the value in that. Like, why did you think that this was a good move for you to come to Canada and speak in front of massage therapists?
Oh, what a good question. It's because I have the systems that I know how to convert my leads into clients.
There you go.
I know how to actually capture leads. I capture leads from any of, you know, being on the podcast here, coming to that event. I capture leads and then I have a nurture process in place for those leads and I convert them to clients. So that's amazing to hear that somebody who's a business coach wouldn't actually like see that.
Exactly.
But I'm going to flip it to people listening to massage therapists and say that, for example, the sales process that I teach involves a free consultation. And because so many people are kind of focused on book sessions, which exactly, Mark, like you were saying, I get paid right now for that session, they sometimes balk at like, why am I giving away a free hour? It's not a session, to be really clear. It's not a massage therapy session. It's a consultation. And the reason you give it away for free is because you enroll somebody for a long-term commitment for a whole treatment plan based on a really good consultation. So it's worth thousands of dollars, but it's 1 hour that you're giving for free, or, you know, hour or less that you're giving for free. When you get that process done right, it's the vast majority. I mean, I see brick and mortar practitioners convert at 80%. So 80% of people come in for a free consultation end up being long-term committed clients. So that's the same kind of thing. It's like, yeah, sometimes you're not paid for this time. And the payoff in the long run is way more than 1 hour was, you know, than a 1 hour session is worth.
I don't know if it's exactly playing devil's advocate. There was just somebody said something to me that I was like, you know what? That is a valid point. I believe this business coach that we're talking about was, you know, it should have taken the opportunity, definitely, because what we were offering was not just like, I'm putting in air quotes, not just exposure. Like, yes and no, but we were getting you in a room
with your future clients.
Like, that's beyond
just random
that's
people.
Beyond exposure.
They're all therapists.
But somebody talked to me about this mentality in this influencer world that we live in, where everybody now is kind of like, you know, expecting certain things, like expecting artists to do things for free. Oh, because I have a large following and I will give you the exposure. So I'm like, okay, I understand that. In this case, though, it wasn't just exposure. There was a whole networking aspect to it. And this is not just like one influencer. This is from a conference that's been running
for
17 years.
Exposure is worth it if you know how to leverage that exposure.
Right, like Joanna just said.
If you have no idea how to leverage that exposure, then you can't see how that's worth it. But I can't figure out how it's not worth it, right? If when I used to play music, if Lenny Kravitz said, Can you open for us? We're not going to pay you a fucking thing. We'd be like, fuck yeah, we'll open for you guys. You want to know why? That's a whole bunch of people that are coming to see you that have no idea who we are.
Yep.
And at the end of the day, they've at least heard our stuff.
Yep.
Right? These are people that would have never heard our stuff before. I'll do that. I'll pay you to come do that. Do you know what I mean?
Like I said, I'm just talking more about like this influencer culture where like somebody who has a really large following on TikTok, it goes to their head, right? That makes them think they're famous. And then they go into, let's say, a restaurant, like a really high-end restaurant, and they expect the chef to prepare something for them for free because, oh, I will make a video about it and I'll blast it out to my, you know, 100,000 followers. Okay. You can't do that everywhere. But that was what somebody said to me is like, well, maybe this is why this person responded to you guys that way. And I was like, I understand,
that's what I mean.
Exposure.
It wasn't just exposure. These are qualified leads sitting in front of you right now, right? These aren't just leads. These are qualified leads sitting in front of you.
I had the same thing happen to me recently in finding a photographer for an event. And there was no pay involved, but it was exactly an audience, and they were going to be allowed to sell their services there and connect with all these leads for their services. And it was the same thing. It was exactly what you're talking about, Amanda. It was a younger, like 30-ish year old, so definitely grown up in influencer culture and had kind of, I think that she had learned this idea of like, fuck that. Oh, can I say that here?
Yes. Of course you can. Do you know where you are?
Like, fuck that. I don't do work for visibility. I don't do work on this like trade, like this idea of like, you're just getting exposure kind of thing. And I just thought, oh, it's so sad that she doesn't realize that this is such an incredible opportunity and that she could have made a whole bunch of money in the long run off it.
It's true. And it is sad because a lot of artists are being taken advantage of, but you as the artist or coach or whatever you are, you as the business need to recognize when something is truly an opportunity versus when, like, you know, some kid wants you to give them something for free because, like, look, I'm TikTok famous. Like, that's very different.
Right. Yeah.
I want to be TikTok famous.
Someone asked me that the other day. Why don't you guys do a bunch of your video clips on TikTok for the podcast? And I was like, because that's not going to get someone to listen to a long form podcast. You know what I mean?
People on TikTok just want to scroll.
I'm putting a 30-second clip on TikTok. You're not clicking my link and going to sit and listen to a 2-hour podcast. It's anyway. But go ahead. Sorry, Ryan will stop talking.
You've been renamed, Joanna. Talk to us about what it is that you've done in the past, because I know you have an event coming up in May. You know, I alluded to it at the beginning of the episode. What is this event? And just for everybody listening, you know, we're talking about doing things to provide value. This event that Joanna is running is absolutely free. Like, this is just a giveaway. So talk to us about what it has been and, you know, what's coming up in May.
Yeah. So I do once or twice a year, I do this week-long event where I am just teaching. I'm teaching my systems. I'm teaching all my processes. I was talking about those 5 departments, and I'm teaching particularly around pricing, packaging, and sales process, but along with other stuff too, marketing's in there as well. And so it's a week-long event, and each day I provide one in-depth training. They're like about 40-45 minutes each. And then a replay is available. You can also listen to it on a private podcast feed. And then we even have live question and answer sessions, which are essentially free coaching. And, you know, I'm there to answer questions about how it all works. And so I love doing it. It is totally free. It is meant to be as many people who want to come, but then I want to be really transparent and just like teach something here about marketing. It's exactly what we're talking about. I have a podcast as well, right? I like giving free content. Mm-hmm. And then I'm to get to sign up for this event, I have your email list. Mm-hmm. So you're going to get emails from me that tell you more things and make you offers. Just want to be clear about that. Like, and it's always your choice. It's always consensual whether you choose to take any further steps. But the event itself, I think it's so good, and I get such amazing feedback from it in terms of what I teach. And so, again, teaching all the systems and structures with the ultimate goal. The goal is higher income with less effort. So really streamlined systems for really steady, predictable income with clients that you love. and without the overworking and headache.
I mean, sounds like a no-brainer to me. This is absolutely free. So can you tell us what the event is called, the days that it's running, all the information, or if there's a website or something that people can get all this information?
Yeah, I'll give you the link and I'll say it right now too. It's Joanna Sapir, which is my name. So Joanna, my last name is Sapir.com/empowered. And it's called the Empowered Practitioner Event. So just so folks know, again, I work with many different wellness practitioners, a lot of acupuncturists, other body workers, movement therapists, and so on. And so it's running from May 6th to 10th. So there's plenty of time to sign up.
And on those days, May 6th to 10th, you said you're teaching one. So what are the hours looking like? Is it just like the 145 minutes or yeah?
It's released in the morning and then you have it for the week. So we release one of them each morning. So I'll just say like the first session, even if you couldn't go to any of the rest, the first session is the big overview. And it's so, so beneficial for practitioners to hear. It's where I basically draw a map of like my business model for having a thriving and resilient practice. I call it the Business Revolution Blueprint. So that first session is really like the big picture. And then the rest of the sessions do deep dives into pieces of it. So the second one is called Call in the Right People. It's the best way to fill your practice with high quality, committed clients. The third one is about getting better client results. So I call it programs, but it's what you guys call treatment plans. Absolutely. So how to create treatment plans that provide more powerful results for your clients and keep them consistent and committed. And then the fourth session is all about the sales process, the step-by-step system to like authentically enroll new clients into investing in their transformation through a whole treatment plan. And then we have a bonus session on what I call my magic tool to make marketing easy. And as well as the Q&A sessions. So those are all, the truth is I actually don't know offhand the times of all that and each of those. But when you sign up, we send you a calendar that you just stick it into your calendar and they're all there.
Very cool. This, like I said, seems like a no-brainer to me. If you're a wellness practitioner and you're struggling on the business end of things, this is probably a good place to start. Plus, you'll get a chance to meet with Joanna and figure out, is this maybe the coach for you? I mean, even if she's not, as you said, like this is completely...
Even if you're not struggling, right? And you just want to make sure you're hitting the markers.
Yeah.
Like it's a fucking fabulous idea. Like I don't need to be struggling to zone into something like this and pick something up that I might not have had or just confirm that, hey, maybe I'm doing something decently well here.
Just if I can circle back to where we started the episode, you know, struggling, I think often sounds like not getting enough clients. And so this is definitely for you if you're very full and booked and busy and where you're so booked and busy that if you take a week off for vacation or if your kid gets sick, like you lose money, right? Yeah. Because you have to cancel your sessions. This is absolutely for you.
Awesome. You have any other questions for Joanna? Mark can talk business all day, by the way, because he teaches three different business type courses here. So he could go on with you all day.
I just love the idea of giving value to the audience. I love it. Just give it away. It builds credibility, too. That's what people don't fucking recognize. It builds credibility.
Yeah.
You know?
Anyway. I'm always skeptical. I do love that Joanna is so transparent because I'm always skeptical when somebody, you know, posts something somewhere, whether it's a short video of like, I'm going to teach you all the, you know, remember when I used to be really obsessed with Schitt's Creek? Have you ever, that's a Canadian show, but do you guys get it? Have you seen
Schitt's Creek? That's a Canadian show? Yeah. Really? No, we definitely haven't.
The whole cast is Canadian. It's all filmed here.
Really? Yeah. I did not know that.
You learned something new too. Anyway, I was obsessed with Schitt's Creek and there's like one episode where they join an MLM and the whole video is like, we're going to teach you our tips and tricks. They just keep saying tips and tricks. But I'm always skeptical when you see these sorts of things and then you have people asking legitimate questions like, how much does it cost? How long is it? Where can I find the, and the person always responds with, send me a DM and I'll share information. I'm like, if the information is so hidden, that puts a lot of, you know, skepticism in me right away. So I think, like you and Mark both do, just giving stuff away, providing value, building your credibility to say, like, I actually do know what the hell I'm talking about, and I'm happy to help you, and I'll even give you some of it for free. And if you just want to take the freebies and run, cool, take the freebies and run. You're not meant to be my client. That's cool.
Exactly.
That's fine.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly.
Blows my mind that people don't do that.
Yeah,
because I've watched a bunch of people. They run courses, and they go and they do a video about their course, and it's just nothing but a fucking big long infomercial,
the sales pitch.
I'm like, why not just give real value instead of talking about the things you're going to teach?
Why
don't you actually teach me something right here and now? You know what I mean?
I totally agree. It's right back to what we were talking about before. Like, it in the long run, it pays off, but even more is goodwill. You know,
absolutely. Well,
free is so important.
Free is important.
Ask John Taffer. You ever watch that guy?
Are you asking me? You used to make me watch it.
I'm asking both of you guys. If you ever see that guy, what's the show called?
Bar Rescue.
Bar Rescue.
Yeah.
I saw him do a whole. I think he was with Gary Vee, and he was doing a video with Gary Vee, and he was talking about the acquisition of a restaurant client, and how statistics show. Like, once someone's come into your place three times, then you've pretty much roped them in. So you got to find a way to give them something the first time, right? And then give them something the second time. And then they come in the third time, they're yours.
Yeah.
They're yours. They're going to be a customer for a very long time.
Yeah. People need to stop being so afraid of giving things away for free.
So he was talking about how he's got these systems. Like, any new patron of the restaurant, they get a red napkin. That way, the owner or the manager knows to go to them and then comp them something of their meal, right? Mm. Have you tried the chicken? Chicken's great. You know what? You're going to get the chicken for free tonight, right? Then give them a card. When you come back next time, you know, you got to have to try this. We got this new dessert. You want to give this a go. Bring this card when you come back. They come back. They got the card. You know who that person is. They get that dessert for free or whatever the case is. Then the third time, hey, you know what? We're working on these new cocktails. Come back, man. We'll get you some of those next time you're here.
Yep.
And they come back and then bang, they got their cocktails and they're three times
and
in.
And they will always come back.
They've had a good experience. Yep. And you're doing that on things that you're not losing tons of money off of, right? You're doing that on things that aren't costing you very much as that restaurant.
And like Joanna said, even if it costs you a little bit right now, it's worth thousands in the future if they're going to continue to come back.
Absolutely.
So don't always look at right here and right now. What is it? Delaying gratification. Like, you can't always have instant gratification.
I love that example because it's systems too, right? Yeah, it's absolutely. Not just like, oh, we should do this and kind of making it up like as you go, or maybe we should do this. It's like, this is what we do. We do this and then we do this and then we do this and they track the numbers and it pays off.
Yeah. We've done the research behind it and this is what we find to be. And so let's create systems behind that will support what we've done with our research and go from there. And then you tweak things as you're going along to get the system that works well. And then once you got the system that works well, it's easy go.
Gravy, baby. Any other questions for Joanna? You feel good?
I feel good.
All right.
Ryan feels great.
Ryan feels great.
Thanks, Ryan.
That's energy happening here.
Thank you both for having me on again. It's really fun talking to you.
Thanks for hanging out.
You guys have been listening to Two Massage Therapists in a Microphone. Peace.